Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokin. Jess and Matt are joining me as we do our annual awards ceremony. Tonight, brought to you by GripMat, GripMat.com, the world's first flexible non-slip tool mat, developed by an Air Force mechanic. You use promo code PLP10 and get 10% off your entire order. Welcome
to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Carly Wickens got married this past weekend. The videos were amazing. The pictures were beautiful. I think we all shot a couple times. Carly posted the dancing video Wednesday morning. So great to see that. It was really inspiring. And before we get started on our awards tonight, I will have Matt break down how we are going to do it. It's going to be a little bit different than last year.
Yeah, so with the awards this year, congrats to the Wickenses, by the way. With the awards this year, we are going to kind of switch it up. We're going to have a lot of the same categories as last year. We're going to have a couple new ones as well. And so what we're going to do is we're going to name a category, and we're each going to nominate a driver. So there'll be three different nominations. And then what we're going to do is kind of discuss the nominations, debate a little, maybe kind of come to a conclusion on, of those three, which one we feel is the quote-unquote winner. And then once we kind of get to that decision, we'll have a winner for that category. And then we'll share a rundown of that on our social media page sometimes next week. And so kind of give you an example of how it would all work. Let's say the category was the best condiment for a burger. So I would start and say that I think bacon is obviously the best condiment for a burger because it adds a little bit of saltiness and a lot of heavenly meat to a burger, and that's why I think it's the best. And then next, one of the other two would go.
I would say hot sauce because I love spicy.
You gotta go with cheese because, hello, I mean, how did you guys miss cheese?
Yeah, I really honestly didn't expect to hear that. I don't know why.
But bacon. All right. Well, anyway, so now we have our three. So we have bacon, hot sauce, and cheese. So now what we're going to do is kind of discuss through our options and then come to a conclusion. I mean, bacon's super good. I would never put hot sauce on a burger. You can't really go wrong with cheese, though. So I think I'd narrow it down to bacon or cheese.
Yeah, hot sauce is kind of the outlier here. But, I mean, I can't say it's bad. It's just not quite as good as the other two.
All right, Matt wins.
Ha! Keep bacon!
We'll keep this short.
I was going to say, if you said cheese, I was going to say, whoa, hang on a second. What if it was a Kraft single?
Well, then Jess would win.
Wait, what? So you want Kraft single on your burger?
Well, I don't know.
He got confused.
Yeah, I got confused.
I was like,
I'm off to a rough start in this awards show.
All this time you've been hating on me. Well, when we get to best driver, don't say Marco Andretti or something, okay?
No promises. I might go off the wall here. Speaking of which, Driver of the Year is our first award up for nomination. Man, I kind of struggled with this because you could take it a couple different ways, but I'm going to go with Joseph Newgarden, not just for winning the championship, but for how consistent he was all season, led the most laps, had 7 podiums, had the most wins, a couple poles, average start of just over 5 at 5.5, and average finish at 5.6. That's pretty consistent for an entire 17 race season. So my vote is Joseph Newgarden.
Well, I didn't write down all of the stats here, but I'm going to go with Pagenaud. I think he started a little slow and made up for it in a big way come May. So I think that he definitely had an excellent season, and obviously to come out with a slow start and still wind up right there in the running for the championship was real fun to watch.
Good nominations. I'm going to nominate Scott Dixon. I feel like Scott had a really good year. I think he had some bad luck along the way at places like Indy, getting caught up in a mess. Gateway with the mechanical, Portland with the mechanical. Texas got in that wreck with Colton Herta, kind of a 50-50 fault there. Had some really good races along the way, and I think, unfortunately, just caught some bad luck and really hampered his championship effort, but he was still just fast everywhere. He did crash on his own at Detroit, which was the first time in some 5 years or something like that, but I'll nominate Scott Dixon.
All right, so I'm going to... I understand your Dixon nomination, but I am going to say Scott Dixon did not win a single pole award in 17 races this year, which has to be the first time in many years. So based on that, I'm going to say I don't know if I agree.
I'm going to look that up, actually. I'm not saying that's an invalid point. That's actually a good point. I'm just kind of curious as to when the last time that was a Scott Dixon stat. I'd probably say like 2005 or something.
Actually, he did not win a pole last year either.
What the heck, Scott Dixon? You're letting me down here. I nominate you for best driver for what?
Before that, he had won at least one pole award in every year dating back to 2010 was the last year. He did not have a single one in 17 races.
What do you think of Pagano?
Pagano was my runner-up choice. I think, like Jess said, the one thing that might weigh him down is the slow start. And, second half of the year, he was definitely phenomenal. But I think the slow start, I mean, you have to lose points for that.
Jess?
I mean, I can kind of see where you're coming from. Joseph was pretty, consistent. However, he did make some pretty big mistakes there toward the end of the year that were pretty much all on him. So it's kind of 50-50 in my opinion. What do you think, Matt?
I think to kind of break the deadlock here, I would be up to switching my vote here, and I would probably side on Joseph Newgarden just because Newgarden was pretty fast everywhere. And do you guys recall what happened at Indy? That was the Grand Prix. Never mind. The Grand Prix, I think he had a spin or something, strategy call or something that didn't go his way.
You're talking Newgarden?
Yeah.
Indy GP, he finished 15th.
I got married that day, so it's a little fuzzy.
Yeah. I don't honestly remember, but I think it was... I think you were right. I know 2 years ago he got involved and spun on lap two or turn three. Don't worry, I'll eventually figure out what I'm trying to say. With Bourdais, yeah, it might have been strategy because I remember that was kind of like the one outlier where he just didn't have a good, didn't qualify well and didn't finish well.
Yeah, because Detroit he crashed, Mid Ohio he crashed. Gateway, he spun on the last lap. So those three were his fault, but he was still pretty fast at all three. So that's kind of where I'm going to side with Newgarden on that one. So right, I guess, so yeah.
Majority rules here. We're going to go with Newgarden.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this year in particular, not to, go on this one more, but anybody really in the top four or five drivers, you could make a strong argument for why they should be driver of the year this year.
Agreed. Okay, so moving on, we are going to do race of the year next. And I'm going to jump in first here with my vote of Coda. I thought it was a fantastic showing. And they did a good job for the first race there. I thought that IndyCar called it right by letting them run wide sometimes and letting the race present itself instead of, trying to manufacture it, basically. So I think Coda was a really, really good race.
I'm going to go with the other brand new track this year and go with Laguna Seca. A lot of people... probably us to a degree included, were skeptical about how the race would be with the lack of passing in years past, and it was pretty much that was the prevailing sentiment throughout the paddock and IndyCar fans, and ended up, while like I said last week, Colton Herta led 83 out of 90 laps or whatever, the amount of passing throughout the field and the battles throughout the field the entire race were pretty phenomenal.
Solid. I'm going to go with Gateway. I think Gateway offered us a lot of action, passing. The end of the race got really crazy with the mix-up of strategies, and then even for Ed Carpenter to challenge Takuma Sato there at the end to have a quasi-photo finish. It wasn't, you know, the closest finish we've ever seen, but they were definitely side-by-side as we get into the line, so that was pretty cool. And as far as Gateway, just as the event, the fanfare was excellent, and the crowd was excellent, and it left a lot of people talking afterwards. So I'll nominate Gateway.
I am going to have to say that if I had to eliminate one of the three right off the bat, it would be Gateway. It was a good race. There was so many people there. But Laguna was definitely my my second one because, honestly, that track did an amazing job while we were there the whole time, you know, shuttling people around, having so much to do for the fans. So it was definitely kind of my second pick.
I guess my only thing with Laguna is that one of the reasons that a lot of people are praising it is because it's historically been a bad race. And so just because it had kind of one really good showing, people tend to think that it may have been a really good race, but I still would say it was like it was definitely an above average and entertaining race, but I don't think it was the greatest road course race I've ever seen. I just think it happened at a track that hasn't had the best events in the past.
I think that's fair.
I am going to do something unprecedented here and eliminate myself from contention on this one and give my vote. Not that I don't know how we're deciding the actual winner here, but I think I'm going to agree with Matt. I think Gateway, you know, I still am kicking myself. No offense to my brother getting married that day, but still kicking myself that I wasn't able to make it.
See, it's this is weird because actually Coda was one of my top three as well, and I really did like Coda, but since Mike agreed with me, I don't think I can go back and change my vote, can I?
No, definitely not.
That would make all three of our three picks have two, and that would be that would be weird. So we can't do that, so we'll just give it to you then.
All right. Well, more to Gateway. Gateway is the real winner in this one. I'm just the loser who's talking. So good job, Gateway. Hope to see you back for many, many years because it's awesome. All right, we're going to move on to Moment of the Year. Moment of the Year can encompass a whole lot of things, from anything we saw in practice, qualifying, race weekend, any news we saw during the year, basically anything that stood out to us that may be one of the most memorable things that we'll look back upon this year. I'm going to go ahead and go first, and I'm going to nominate Fernando Alonso getting bumped from the Indianapolis 500. It was a long shot story of Juncos, who had a crashed car and their backup that was put together with tape and spit, and it went out there with Kyle Kaiser and managed to bump off the juggernaut known as McLaren. I know they kind of had a rough showing leading up to qualifying. It wasn't necessarily a surprise per se based on what we were seeing, but still to see such a well-funded effort and with a guy like Fernando Alonso behind the wheel to get bumped by Juncos of all teams, definitely something we're going to be talking about for quite some time. So that's kind of, to me, my nomination of Moment of the Year.
Good choice. So can I, you know, and you can tell me no here, can I go with Kyle Kaiser making the 500 after the carb day crash, or is that pretty much lumped into what you just spoke
about? I'd say it's a little lumped in.
Okay. All right. So my second choice will be, and this is, you know, I'm going to say the last 15 laps or so of the Indy 500 with Rossi and the eventual winner, Simon Pagenaud, battling it out. That was one of the, you know, better, you know, battles for the lead all season to me. So that is my moment of the year, is the closing segments of the Indy 500.
All right. Mine is actually going to be something we already kind of mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to go with Robert Wickens getting married. Obviously, that was kind of a fairy tale story with everything that he's been through in the past year. And seeing him be able to stand for his vows and also be able to do his dance with his new bride was just, you know, it pulled those heartstrings a little bit. I may have teared up a little bit. So that's going to be my moment of the year.
I think we can cut this argument short and just say Jets wins.
Yeah, well, I was going to
add on to
that. Not even going
to try to defend it.
I was going to add on to that, like, either, you know, between maybe his, like, rehab videos that he's been posting and the strides he's made, and then the
drive in Toronto.
The pace lap that he did at Toronto. I think if we're being honest with ourselves, I think Robert Wickens' year is kind of a moment of the year, if we're being honest, because he's done such a good job, and it's just been such a joy to see him getting better. So are we agreed on that one?
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, so moment of the year is Robert Wickens getting better each and every day and putting a smile on his face that warms all of our hearts. So good job, Robert.
Yeah, hopefully we see more inspirational content all off season. I know I was feeling kind of tired today. I saw that. I went, all right, it's time to get off my butt and go to the gym this afternoon. So up next is disappointment of the year. Now, there are some obvious choices here. I'm going to go with Ed Jones. He super nice guy. Just, you know, he qualified in the top six at the Indy 500. Just kind of had a blah race. But the rest of the season, God, I don't know. I'm trying to pull it up real quick here. He had one top 10 finish at the Indy GP, finished sixth. Outside of that, a lot of races that he was running and a lot of races he ended up a lap down or just really off the pace the entire time. So kind of an uninspiring year from Ed Jones, and you expected more with him going to a pretty solid team in Ed Carpenter Racing, but just didn't really do much of anything this year.
I'm going to go with Zach Veach. He pretty much had no moments that stuck out to me as being something, you know, that we really wanted to discuss or talk about. Nothing great happened. Just kind of rode along there in most races. Not all, but in most races, he was kind of a back marker. So I think it was really disappointing seeing him kind of, I guess, struggle this year, especially in his Andretti car. I would have expected more from him.
Sorry, I was going to say Foyt, but I'm changing my answer because that's just, I mean, they're disappointing every year. So I'm going to go with Marco Andretti. And the reason I'm going to go with him is that, you know, we do kind of bag on him a little bit on the show. But honestly, like, he didn't have the worst 2018. He had some good races, race like Toronto where he was set to finish fourth, but they were like one lap short on fuel. Those kind of stood out to me last year. But this year, just not really fast anywhere, didn't qualify well anywhere. The Indianapolis 500 was absolutely dreadful to finish four laps down, and then the next Ty's car was like a lap down or something like that. And he was just lost that entire race. He was kind of lost on just about every oval this year, which is unlike him. You know, if all else fails, he usually shows some good speed at like Texas or Indy or whatnot. So just a pretty brutal year, kind of along with Zach Veach. So my nomination is for our low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, man, I don't know how we eliminate one here, but
it's hard.
I'm gonna defend Zach Veach on one weekend, or actually two weekends. Detroit, Belle Isle, two eighth-place finishes and qualified third the second race. Iowa, he drove from 20th and finished 7th on a long and rough day and night for the drivers. That's really the only defending I can do. Jess is pretty much generally right. Marco, I'm sorry, Matt. You know, Marco, you know, Iowa is the one that sticks out even more than the 500 to me, where eventually he gets black flagged because he just, the car isn't handling. If one of you guys has a better argument to eliminate one, I'm all ears here.
I think the only reason I would say to, I mean, I can't. I just can't. Like, the problem with Zach Veach is that it was his sophomore year of a three-year contract in which we're expecting him to get better each year, and it's almost like he got worse. And that just, to me, baffles me. I don't really feel comfortable saying, let's just eliminate Ed Jones, because he was also pretty terrible just about everywhere we went. He had a couple bad breaks here and there, but as a whole, he's just kind of slow everywhere. So it's kind of, what do you think, Jess?
Yeah, this one's super tough. Marco, obviously, on the ovals, there's pretty much no one that you could say is worse than he was for the season. Man, I don't...
How about we eliminate Marco because it's his 14th year and sometimes we're just not surprised?
All right.
Is that fair?
Okay.
I mean, yeah, you know, we know what Marco's career is at this point, for better or for worse. And, you know, a little bit, you know, like Matt said, 2018 wasn't awful. This year pretty much was a little bit even worse than that, so... We'll eliminate that. So we're down to Veach and Ed Jones.
Either you two changing your vote?
No, I'm gonna stick to my guns here and say Ed Jones. He had a couple good qualifying efforts. You know, Toronto, he started sixth. The Indy 500, he was fourth. The Indy GP, he was fifth. Outside of that, he didn't start. The highest he started was 13th. I'm sorry, 11th out of that. Most of the time it was 15, 18, 20. You know, not too often did he even make it out of the Fast 12, if at all. So at least Zach Veach did that a couple times.
The only reason I think Zach Veach is more of a disappointment in this case is because it's surprising. I didn't really feel as shocked by Ed Jones not having a great year as I did Zach Veach not having a great year after his good showing last year. And like you said, it's his second year of his contract. So I would have expected him to improve or at least stay the same, but I feel like he went backwards.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. I'm going to concede this one and we'll go with Zach Veach.
You didn't even let me vote. I was going to do the honorable thing and just say Veach. You just wanted to wave the white flag.
Yeah, I did. As quick as possible.
All right. Our disappointment of the year, Zach Veach.
Oh, shoot. Well, we're going to move on to another disappointment here. So this time we're going to be talking about the disappointing race of the year. I can see this one going in a lot of different directions. So this is going to be interesting. I'm going to throw mine out there first, and I'm going to maybe shock you guys. But I'm going to say Pocono. The reason I'm going to say Pocono is because the first lap incident and pretty much the entire world's reaction was, we're not going back to Pocono after that happened. And quite frankly, it ruined the whole race for myself. We were having a little watch party for that one also. And I know most of the people there were pretty disappointed. Not so much in the race itself, but just the fact that that pretty much sealed the deal, and then it was kind of, I don't know, I just kind of lost interest almost.
All right, so I'll go next. I'm going to go with, and the reason I'm doing this is because I looked through every race this year and tried to see if there was like one key thing that we could like take away from a race or... You know, look back at this race and that moment stands out. And when I look back at St. Petersburg, not a whole lot to me stands out. And I was kind of catching highlights of the race the other day, and it was an okay race. I mean, I think we were really fortunate this year to have a lot of good races. So to kind of pick a different bad one is tough. So for me, St. Petersburg didn't do a lot for me this year, so I would nominate that one.
I really struggled with this one because, like Matt said, there. I'm going to go with Long Beach, and you know, Rossi winning by 40 seconds that doesn't really help the situation there, and it was not. It's tough to say that because it's such an iconic venue and it's so cool just to. I was not there this year, but you know, watching it on TV, it just looks like an amazing place to be, but. I don't feel like there was a lot that really happened in Long Beach. And I watched that 30-minute highlight that IndyCar puts on YouTube.
So I guess kind of pose a question to you: is there a track that needs standing starts as bad as Long Beach does on the schedule?
Oh, man. Portland?
That's a good one. Just because I just think that there's just nothing more disappointing than getting the first three rows aligned and having the green flag fly at Long Beach, because I just feel like it takes away from the first turn. But I guess that doesn't necessarily... That's kind of more like a Long Beach issue. That's not like a reflection on the 2019 race, though. I mean, Pocono was my first choice. I thought, like Jess said, I was so pissed off after that crash. It really did ruin the rest of the race for me, and was just glad everybody was okay. But just, again, for that to happen and for the world to react and see the social media, it wasn't a good look for IndyCar.
Yeah, agreed. Not at all.
I'm willing to give this one to Jess.
Jess is our big winner so far, if anybody's keeping track at home.
I'm keeping track, in case you guys try to cheat.
Just in case Mike later says that it's him that's the big
exactly.
winner.
Exactly.
No, I think I got the first one, and I haven't come close on any of the other ones.
I have a system.
I got Gateway. That's it. All right, let's see here. Let's see if I can win back some points here. The Pit Lane Parlay Award for Best Off-Season Signing. So this is going to be going to the driver who signed prior to the 2019 season starting, and or maybe throughout the season, whenever. But basically just a team signing a driver, and which we thought was the best. So I'm going to go first here, and I'm going to go with Felix Rosenqvist. And so not only did Felix Rosenqvist really succeed on the track, but I feel like another reason that it was the best off-season signing is because it seemed like Ganassi had a lot of hurdles to jump through to get that to happen. Felix has driven in a lot of series throughout the world, was tied up with Formula E. They could have got him last year, but it seems like they just weren't able to kind of figure out a schedule to get him full-time, so they went with Ed Jones. But this year, they managed to make it work, and while he has some work to do on the ovals for sure, I think he really established himself on the road courses very well, including what we just saw, Laguna Seca, which was a really good kind of carving his way through the field to salvage a top five finish. So I'm going to go with Felix Rosenqvist as the best off-season signing.
Good choice. I'm going to take our pal Santino Ferrucci, kind of solidifying that second coin seat, which has been TBA until the day before St. Pete, since I've been about 16 years old. And he really outperformed expectations all year. We expected Colton Herta to do well. We expected Rosenqvist to do well. Nobody really gave Ferrucci a shot in Rookie of the Year, and if it wasn't for his mistake in the last race of the year at Laguna, bumping in Asado and then having to retire from the race, he would have completed all 17 races on the calendar, which for a rookie, and especially somebody who, some people were doubting most of the year, even as he continued to have success, my vote is for Mr. Ferrucci.
Well, I am going to take Herta. I mean, it's hard to argue with three poles and two race wins, being, 18 and 19 years old. So I think that was an excellent decision for Harding Steinbrenner to bring him up and let him have an opportunity. So I'm going to go with Herta because obviously you can't really beat three poles and two wins.
All right, discuss.
I'm going to eliminate Felix.
What?
Because we all knew he was going to do well. Yes, it was a great off-season signing, but the other two, Herta, 19, he had a very good Indy Lights career, but, was prone to the occasional mistake for getting a little too aggressive. Ferrucci, nobody gave a shot. Those were better because they were more some of the results were more unexpected.
I mean, you're kind of just describing Colton Herta, who had a great Indy Lights career, but was prone to some mistakes.
Right, but also, nobody gave Ferrucci a chance in hell to do anything this year. And
that's fair. I disagree with your Rosenquist assessment, but that's a fair argument.
Well, I mean, that's fine. You don't have to agree.
No, yeah, that's fair.
But you're going to lose.
I mean, I'm clearly going to stick with my Herdo because, like I said, it's kind of hard to beat three poles and two race wins in your rookie season. So that's who I'm going to go with.
I think we might be at it. Just because Mike casts off Rosenquist doesn't mean I have to cast off Rosenquist. I don't know. I'm not trying to be stubborn. I genuinely do think Rosenquist is the best signing. I mean, if you guys want me to pick a runner up, I would say Ferrucci. And the only reason I would say Ferrucci is that because Herta kind of was sort of in the, well, so was Ferrucci, because Ferrucci joined race with Coyne last year too. I was going to say because Herta drove for Harding technically in 2018 for Sonoma, but so did Ferrucci, I guess.
Yeah, Ferrucci had four races last year.
He had four. He had two Detroits, Portland, and Sonoma.
Yeah, and all right. Herta's outing with them last year was just mostly a test to see if they would continue to keep him, and they did. So, man, this is a tough one.
I don't know. I want to dig in my feet here. I don't want to give up.
I don't want to give either. Up either. It's tough.
All right, let's just pause the recording and post on Twitter, and we'll come back to this later on. No, I'm just kidding. wouldn't that be funny? All right, Jess, yeah, I am going to give you the power to eliminate one of us.
Oh, is she going to eliminate her favorite Santino Ferrucci, or is she going
to
eliminate
Ferrucci? Okay, do you guys want to see my... You might not be able to read my writing, but I will show you my list, and I swear to God I made this up earlier. So, Ferrucci was actually my number one pick.
All right.
Wait. All right.
Thanks, Jess.
So, the flawless elimination method that we got to has pointed to the fact that the best 2019 offseason signing is Santino Ferrucci.
Thank you. And before we continue on our awards here, just a quick Patreon shout out. I'm going to pick three random here. Thank you to Michelle, thank you Mike Silver, and thank you Stephen A. Clark for your continued support month in and month out. So with that, we will go to worst 2019 off-season signing. I think I'm going to continue on with my disappointment choice here and go with Ed Jones. Came over to Ed Carpenter after 1 year at Ganassi and didn't have a great 2018 either, but most people expected him to have some sort of decent results. And again, as I already said in my last answer, didn't really do too much. So I'm sorry, Ed. I love you, but no.
Bagging on Ed Jones. Yeah. Nice.
I feel terrible.
I thought outside the box a little bit here. And my worst off-season signing was Harding signing Pato O'Ward. And I think the reason that it was the worst signing is because it actually never happened. And it's a shame that it never happened because now Pato's kind of in the mess with Red Bull. And he definitely should be on the IndyCar grid full-time, but just can't seem to secure funding and kind of wrong place, wrong time. And the best part about the whole thing was, quote-unquote, best part about the whole thing was that when Harding signed him, there was no money for that seat. So I don't know what their plan was exactly, but to me, that was the worst off-season signing, and again, because it never actually happened.
Okay, so this is the only one that was not an off-the-wall one on my my list, but I hope you guys will count this. I'm going to go with Marco because I think technically had to re-sign once he became part owner. So we're going to say Marco had to sign because of that. And obviously, this season was not one of his better showings. I mean, he could not get his stuff together, especially on ovals. And frankly, just almost didn't seem like he cared a lot. So I am going to have to say Marco was the worst off-season signing.
So do you blame Marco Andretti for retaining Marco Andretti?
I don't know. How does the ownership portion work? Like, who makes that decision?
Because that was always my favorite thing, is that it was Ed Carpenter ever going to fire Ed Carpenter?
Negative.
That would be the best headline ever.
No, he's going to be governor of Indiana soon. I'm pretty sure we determined that talking to Mr. Pigott a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
I am inclined to agree with Matt here. The Pato situation was a debacle from, you know, the first day of the COTA test when all that news finally came out. So, I don't know how you announce a signing when you don't have the money for the signing.
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
All right, Matt wins this one.
All right, guys, so our next category is going to be the best strategy call of the year. And mine is kind of, I guess, thinking outside the box a little bit here, but I'm going to go with Rahal, Foyt, and Carpenter for their St. Louis strategies, because what was that podium? That was amazing. Never thought I would see that. Absolutely brilliant. So it played out well for all of them, and pretty much all of them said, you know, in the presser that it was strategy, specifically tire strategy, and dealing with the tire wear there. So I'm going to go with a trifecta for mine.
All right, I like it. I'm going to go with Tim Cindric's call in Detroit race number one, when Joseph Newgarden won. With the starting on the wets and finding the time to switch tires, he just pulled him in at the perfect time and got him that win, and this was a season where if it came down to points, wins are obviously the next tiebreaker, and Newgarden had the most wins, so I think, you know, that win after the month of May was huge in terms of getting Newgarden's second half of the year started.
I am going to go with something Mike got to witness, and that was Scott Dixon's strategy call at Iowa, or maybe more specifically, Mike Hall's strategy call at Iowa. For those who don't remember, Dixon was pretty much in 14th, 15th all race, but decided on that final, or before the final stint, to stay out as long as possible and caught a lucky yellow. And so even though his car was garbage the entire race, because he caught that lucky yellow and stayed out as long as he could on really bad tires, ended up finishing the race in P2, which is unheard of, just, again, because his car was so bad that entire race. So for them to pull that off, kind of just, again, a testament to Mike Hall and Scott Dixon for doing that maybe like once or twice a year, just pulling something out like that. So for me, it was Scott Dixon at Iowa.
Can I eliminate one right off the bat?
No. Yeah, go ahead.
It's you. I have to say that Mike Hall and Scott Dixon would win my vote out of the two of yours.
Okay.
And I would say out of the 2 years, I think Jess's would get my vote for the two of yous, but I think it's safe to say that Jess and I would stick to each other's. So,
I am going to give the tiebreaker here to Matt. I think Mike Hall and Scott Dixon, you know, pulled something out of nothing when Dixon's car was awful most of the day, or most of the night. I don't even remember what time that race was. The whole day was so long.
I think he got done at like 7 a.m. the next day,
didn't
he?
Pretty much.
that's the time you got to the airport, wasn't it?
It was. Thank you to blogger Mike Knapp for getting me back to Chicago so I could go home.
Respect. That was a good move. All right, we're going to move on to the boneheaded decision of the year. This nomination is for whoever we think had either the worst call, the worst move on track. This could go a lot of different directions, so I'm kind of excited to see where this goes. I'll nominate first here. Mine is going to go to McLaren not having a car ready after Alonso's crash because it wasn't painted the right shade of orange. It was kind of in line with my most memorable moment of the year, which Alonso getting bumped. It was just kind of a calamity of failures, and when we heard why they missed a day of practice because the color wasn't the right, there the car wasn't the right color of orange, I'm pretty sure you heard a collective like, from everybody who was reading that article and going, is that really that important? Like, we couldn't just do this after you guys had safely put it in the show. Like, we had to get it right before we went out there, as if anybody would even notice anyways. So, to me, that was the most boneheaded decision of the year.
I'm going to go with Takuma Sato in Pocono. I think, you know, right off the bat, we've got two pretty good options here. But, I mean, do I even really need to explain? So I'm just going to leave it at that. We know what happened.
I'm going a little outside the box again here. I'm going to go with Dragon Racing and their visa issues. They really should have been able to figure that out long before. As far as I'm aware, they probably still haven't figured it out. But they should have had that done long before, they got themselves in trouble. So that is my boneheaded move of the year.
All right. I'm sorry, Jess, but I think I would eliminate you on this one.
I mean, it is definitely one of my favorite pitfalls from the year, because how do you get that wrong? But there's just something about Sato or not having your car the right color that just baffles me for some reason.
Let's let Jess be the tie-breaking vote here. If she's going to pick between the two of us, who is she picking?
I'm going to have to go with McLaren, only because being such a huge organization, you shouldn't have stupid little issues basically screwing you up that bad.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
No disrespect to Mike, because I mean, Sato, we don't need to hash it out again. It's just, that was definitely a boneheaded decision, too. It's kind of one of those where we had a lot of good answers.
Yeah, so good choice there. So my last category for myself is most improved driver. I'm going to go, I don't know if this is outside of the box, but Simon Pagenaud, who had a, you know, not really great 2018, everybody kind of wrote him off at the beginning of 2019, and then showed everybody who's boss and really just kind of, you know, honed in on his craft with this new aero kit and, you know, really surprised a lot of people the second half of the year. And made a huge statement.
I'm going to go ahead and go with Jack Harvey. I think Jack had a pretty solid year. A couple races were a little below par, but he had played races like the Grand Prix of Indy, where he finished on the podium, which was really good for that whole team. Places like Portland, where he was minding his own business and got taken out. And I think, you know, that slow progression from 6 races in 2018 to 10 races this year to hopefully a full-time schedule next year, as we kind of await to see who Shank is going to align with there. Hopefully we can see Harvey on the grid full-time this year, because I really do want to see kind of where he stacks up in the championship and to see if he can maybe mount a, you know, top, maybe low top 10 effort, maybe somewhere around 9th or 10th place, I think would be really huge for them. So I thought, you know, Jack Harvey, outside of a couple races, was pretty fast everywhere he went this year, and was really nice to see.
I've actually, while we were sitting here, I've bumped up my number two person to number one, because the more I thought about it, the more I thought that he was probably most improved, and that's Charlie Kimball. We didn't see any Charlie Kimball moves from Charlie Kimball this year. You know, there was no, like, pinballing anybody out of the way. I mean, I frankly said multiple times I was just waiting for it, and it just never happened. He improved quite a bit. Now, granted, his results weren't great by any stretch of the imagination, but I think as far as year over year, the improvement was definitely huge.
All right.
I guess the only reason I have a little tough time saying that Simon Pagenaud is the most improved driver is that because he's a former champion at the team that he was the champion with. So, I mean, maybe it was more of a he did really bad in 2018 versus improved in 2019 is kind of the way I look at it.
I actually would give my vote to Jack Harvey in this one.
I mean, to be honest, Jess does make a pretty good case. Jess does make a pretty good case with Kimball, too. But I just feel like, I don't know. It is good to see Kimball not do Kimball moves. That was refreshing this year for sure.
No joke. So if I'm being the tiebreaker yet again, this one I actually had him as number three on my list, and that was Pagenaud. I thought year over year he was better. So, host Mike, I'm going to have to go with you this time.
Well, I thank you. I was not expecting that. I am almost speechless right now.
The most improved driver was the Indy 500 winner. I mean, the Indy 500, though, I mean, it's a race that he's been okay at. And then this year just came out of nowhere.
He also did really, struggled at the beginning of the year and then kind of got his stuff together. So I also kind of took that into account when I put him on my list.
Fair.
Okay, so moving on. My last category of the evening is going to be the Road to Indy Driver of the Year. And this one... I'm torn. I'm really torn between all three of my choices. They could very well be interchangeable for different reasons. I am going to go with Askew. He was just consistent all year, did a great job, and then he did, pull it together there at the end to win the championship. So I've got to give it to Oliver.
I am going to go outside the box. I'm actually not going to pick one of the champions. I'm going to go all the way down to Indy Pro 2000 and say Parker Thompson. And that's probably because I'm a little biased and I'm a big Parker Thompson guy. But Parker Thompson had 8 podiums. Finished third in the championship. Let's see, how many points did he finish behind? About 80 or so. So he was a little outside the championship to Kyle Kirkwood, who we kind of all assumed was going to win that championship. But for Parker Thompson, it seemed like the deal came together late, did the best with what he had, won the first two races of the year. And for those who didn't listen to our episode when we had him on a while ago, he was just an awesome guy to talk to and a really nice guy. So again, I'm being a little biased, but I am a big Parker Thompson guy, and I was really happy to see him succeed kind of every track he went to this year. So I'll go with him.
Yeah, good one there. That was my number one. I was sure I was going to be able to get that one in, and that's why I let you go second there. That's fine. I'll go with Kyle Kirkwood. You know, Rasmus Lind was leading the championship, even as Kirkwood went on his win streak until I believe it was Portland when Rasmus had a couple not too good races. Kirkwood won 9 out of the remaining 11 races, probably would have won the last Laguna race if his teammate didn't take him out on the opening corner of the opening lap. But going for a team in RP Motorsport that didn't really have a super impressive showing last year, which was their first year over here in America, and to have the series champion this year is pretty impressive. So, Kirkwood, really, at one point, he won the second Toronto race and then did not lose a race until the final race of the year when he was, as I said, crashed out by his teammate.
Did we hear that part where Mike said that Parker Thompson was his first choice? Or was I just hearing things?
You were probably hearing things.
Oh, okay.
I thought I was the sleepy one on this one, but maybe not. Yeah, no, you did hear that correctly. And you both put up fair arguments. So I'm going to go ahead and eliminate myself. And I'm going to let y'all battle it out.
Can I argue against my own choice? Can I argue against my own choice? I gave a biased answer. I'll be unbiased here for a second. I feel
everybody
like
arguing against themselves on
maybe
this one.
I don't know. It's just like Kyle Kirkwood not winning the champion. Or sorry, not Kyle Kirkwood. Parker Thompson not winning the championship. It's hard to give him Road to Indy Driver of the Year. But again, I just feel like he did a lot with what he had to work with, and given it was kind of like a race-to-race deal, the fact that he kept it together and finished third in the championship's really good. I mean, I feel like just like with Kirkwood, he's kind of like the prodigal son of the Road to Indy at the moment. You know, he did so well last year, and everybody just kind of assumed he was going to do so well this year, and look at that, he won the championship. So it's like, you know, good for him, but it wasn't too surprising per se, even if he did have to kind of come back.
Yeah, the battle between him and Rasmus Lind was, you know, a dead heat. I think in the end he only won by, what, 2 points, 3 points maybe. So I am not backing down on this one. Kirkwood racing for a, you know, a newer team in RP Motorsport, and not for, you know, a Cape Motorsport or Juncos or one of the other powerhouse Road to Indy teams and winning the championship. Kind of, I know he was predicted to win the championship, but doing it for a team like RP definitely gives it more credence.
I don't want to back down. So Jess, you can go ahead.
I'm gonna have to go with Kirkwood on this one. Yep.
Kyle Kirkwood, our Road to Indy Driver of the Year. Safe to assume he'll be in Indy Lights next year?
He's got that scholarship, so I'd imagine. How much do you want to bet he goes to SQC at Andretti?
No. What? Never. Not the best seat in Indy Lights. Surely you're mistaken. All right. Final category of our 2019 awards show. Again, thanks so much to everybody, who, not only for listening to this week, but for those of you who've listened all year or maybe just a couple episodes here and there. We really do appreciate all of your support. Hope you guys have enjoyed this award ceremony. Feel free to chime in. Our Twitter handle, again, is @PitLaneParley, P-A-R-L-E-Y. We definitely love to hear some of your guys' opinions, so thanks again for listening. Our final category of the awards show is a little more lighthearted. It is, like our last year's one as well, our favorite IndyCar Twitter user. This could be a fan, driver, team, personality, etc., etc. It could be pretty much anybody that likes to tweet about IndyCar. I'm going to be going with a guy we've mentioned several times in the show, and I'm going to go with Alexander Rossi. I think Alexander Rossi does such a good job at engaging with fans. Has some really hilarious tweets, and I think the one that stole the show was kind of mocking Joseph's hashtag all year prior to Laguna Seca, and his hashtag was Rise Above Her. Joseph's hashtag was Rise Above, so Rise Above Her, I guess, is his low-key attempt at one-upping Joseph. So I think he's definitely one of the funniest on social media, and even the other day posted a photo of Hinch in a Napa fire suit because of what they're doing in Bathurst, and it kind of looked exactly like Rossi, and it was super funny. So I'm gonna go with Alexander Rossi.
So I am gonna actually go with IndyCar proper this year. I think they really upped their game, especially over the past couple of seasons. They're constantly having a good social media presence, you know, throwing up videos, throwing up behind the scenes stuff, engaging with fans, and I've just really appreciated everything that they have done this year.
Good choice. I have a question before I decide on my final answer here. This isn't technically an IndyCar Twitter, but how can we not vote for Rich Energy?
Actually, that's a good point.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I mean, they...
Hey.
I,
Did you know your t-shirt's kind of like a joke because they're not that good of a company?
That's why I love it. I wear that Rich Energy t-shirt with pride at the gym once a week.
Said, I was just trying to be like every person that replied to your tweet.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of hate for enjoying my my Rich Energy t-shirt, which I still don't understand.
Hey, man, do you know they're a joke?
I still, that's going to be my pitfall of 2019, is the people who replied to that tweet thought I was serious. But I don't know if I can say on a more serious note, but my vote is Rich Energy. And I think we all know why. They're back in full force in the last couple handful of days since the last F1 race in Russia.
As I say, do we have any updates on their happenings?
I don't know. I think their CEO is on a Viking boat with an F1 car or something ridiculous, probably.
Is that Photoshopped?
Oh, probably. I made that one up, but if somebody has Photoshop skills can do that, please. You'll win. You'll win any sort of prize you want from us. Jess, any thoughts?
Oh, Rich Energy is a hot mess, so it's kind of hard to not pick them. But I'm going to stick with my IndyCar one. I think they really upped their game this year.
I'm going to stick with Rossi just because I think he's a savage.
Why don't we make this our poll of the week? Once the episode is, on Friday, I would vote for Rossi if I wasn't picking one of my own, but we will also open this one up to the fans since this is fun, and I can see how much I crush you guys in this one.
Okay,
I'm feeling confident.
Well, if we tag them in it, of course they're going to retweet.
Oh,
it.
Oh so. God, I hope you better tag them.
You know, we're going to be associated with, like, you know, people are going to be tweeting at Pitlane Parlay. Do you guys know they're a joke, man?
That's fine. I welcome the chat. And if more people find us because we talk about Rich Energy, that's even better.
Perfect.
So that wraps it up. What a season. I'm sad that we have to wait 150-something more days until St. Pete, but... Yeah. Again, like Matt said, thank you to everybody for listening all year. It's been a blast, and we'll be here every week all off season. I'm sure we'll be talking about the Arrow Screen, some other fun stuff next week, and got some cool announcements in the next few weeks. So again, thank you to everybody for listening and tuning in and hanging out with us at the track or at a gathering, you know, that Jess had. So with that, Jess, let's wrap it up one last time during the season.
Well, first, can I say who won out of us?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that we were doing that. Okay, you can't wrap it up.
Pending the fan poll.
Well, no,
yeah, pending,
it doesn't matter, actually, because the person who won was already one up, so it doesn't really matter. So the winner is going to be... Mr. Hickey this year. He won fair and square.
What are you booing? Who's booing? What is that booing?
I had that all queued up as soon as I knew it wasn't. I knew it wasn't me.
No, actually, fun fact for everybody at home, Mike actually has like a quartet of people standing behind him the whole show who either boo or applaud.
It's creepy.
Wouldn't that be amazing? That would I don't want people in my house, so let's please please don't think that as an invitation. It's very late at night when we record, and no, just no. All right, Jess. Well, if we have nothing else, you are now free to sign us off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.